Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome into a special-ish, shortened-ish, out-of-the-box podcast. This is an episode that we have never done because we've never had to do it. We have never before had to record a pod from home before the World Series, but after Supers. And yet here we are, Gray Robertson and Tom Canterbury. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hello, Gray. Yeah, it's a weird situation to be in, but here we are.
Yeah.
And when you said that on the way home, I was like, wait a minute. And I just kind of had to think back. And I was like, yeah, the last time Alabama lost in Supers was 2018, and you didn't go to that.
And we did not have a podcast then.
We didn't have the podcast yet. So, yeah, then the other time, you know, 2020, there was no World Series. And then 2022, Alabama lost in regionals, but not super regionals. So we had even more time to figure this out. So we'll have a truncated version here of Out of the Box because Gray's about to turn right around and head back to OKC for Softball America. And then after the World Series, we'll do our final end of the year wrap up of everything.
Yes, hopefully with Murph and with a guest, we'll do all the usual finale stuff. This is more a little bit of a wrap up on the Norman Super Regional itself. A little bit prediction based discussion on the World Series, maybe a thought or two on some Supers. This is where I wish we were doing a full length episode because, Tom, the other Supers outside of Alabama OU, which again was kind of generic in the grand scheme of super regionals. Everything else is pretty berserk this past weekend.
Yeah, Bama OU did not get off the rails a whole lot, especially compared to what else happened around the country. But there were some really crazy supers and some pretty surprising results overall.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about that, and then we will play the audio. I know I heard from a lot of you. I don't know why we've never done this. Honestly, we at the end of the year when the season ends, and I guess the reason why we haven't done it is because the season's ended in OKC and we've had 3-hour shows already. We do a dedication for the seniors. And I actually this year had a lot of requests. Hey, we didn't get to hear it. And there are ways to go listen to it if you want to go back and check the Varsity app. But what easier way is there than me just pulling the 15 minutes and 30 seconds and plugging it into the podcast? So Tom, that's what we're doing. We're going to put it right here.
And a quick like background on how this even started. We didn't like sit down and say, okay, once the season, the last, when way back in 2019 or whenever we started doing this, like we didn't sit down and say, hey, whenever the season ends and in that last post game, we need to single out and like dedicate something to every senior. It just kind of happened organically as we sat in the press box in OKC after that 2019 season came to an end with just as crazy of an ending to that year as it was with the back-to-back games against Oklahoma. And then it just kind of grew from there. And we kind of now to the point of, yeah, we're going to do this. And, unfortunately got to kind of start thinking about it. After the third inning there, game number two, I was like, this is probably going to be the time we're going to be doing this. And I had a little time to kind of think about what the five seniors in this class meant.
Yeah. So just a fair warning for the people. I have listened to the audio because I had to shorten it into the actual length, and it is way more sobby than I even thought. But that's the way it is. And if that, look, I'm not going to apologize for giving a damn. I will say that all the time.
No, and you shouldn't. And that's what makes it important. And I got misty a few times myself, but one of us has to kind of keep it together.
Or else. So
so that kind of falls on me. But yeah, what a tremendous class. And people that mean a lot to us more than just what they do on the softball field, for sure.
Yes, and I hope that that's something that a lot of people will hear and understand. Finally,
Yeah.
hopefully. Fingers crossed. After
Yeah.
that, we will do Tom's Hungry. We will not do Off the Wall. I know. I know. There are some of you who are also listening to this hoping for the beautiful parlay of the senior dedication and Off the Wall. That is not happening here. We will be saving Off the Wall for the season finale. I do have stuff, but we will also look at the season long stuff. There were some things that the Dimes who were moaning said that really did not pay off when they dropped those
No.
comments in February.
No, that's it seems to be another annual tradition of the annual reading of receipts at the end of the year because of Off the Wall. And you would think, you know, like we talked with Jen Schroeder in the last episode, why people just continue to bet against Alabama in certain situations when historically, you know, take a look, it's a program that gets it done in way more often than not. And, you know, even this year, yes, they fell short of the Women's College World Series, but so did every other team in the country other than the eight that are going. And, you know, they were one of the eight that made the Super Regionals that didn't go to the Women's College World Series. And, you know, there's a lot of programs, you know, at the Power Four level, at the mid-major level, in all levels of D1 softball that would trade where they finished with where Alabama finished in a heartbeat. And, you know, the reason why we have to do Off the Wall on these type of situations, because people just don't keep anything in perspective. And that will certainly be the case when we do the great receipt reading once again in the season finale.
Oh boy, I can't wait. I got some things to get off my chest. But that's why we do have to wait, because it is like, it's not an over Zoom proposition. We have to be in the room together doing this.
And I have a feeling probably in the next couple of weeks with, you know, all the craziness that happens in the world of college softball around this time, portal activity, things of that there'll be more dumb things said and things that will be proven literally wrong within, you know, within 24 hours of when it's said, as far as portal goes. So that needs to be put into this whole thing as well.
Oh yeah, I've already seen plenty of stuff about Alabama's current situation, which we'll talk about later, because official announcements have not been made, but everyone who's saying things, like 85% of y'all are wrong. I'm just saying. We'll dive into that later. But let's talk about what we just saw in the Norman Super Regional. We talked about it a lot. If you want to listen to it, go listen to the 3 hours and 3 minutes on air that we spent discussing Alabama and Oklahoma. We will talk in the finale about the entire season and what this year was for the Crimson Tide. Right now we're spending specifically these couple minutes talking about this weekend. And Tom, my main takeaway was postseason Oklahoma is truly a different animal. As we have come to know, it also feels a little different experiencing it in real time. But also, if you're going to beat them, you cannot do like five things. And Alabama did all five things. Did not get the nine hole out, gave up free passes, gave up the long ball when people were on base, committed an error. It wasn't a devastating error, but there was an error, so that counts. And just not getting the hits with runners on base. And if you do those five things, your winning percentage is basically zero against Oklahoma. And a lot of credit to the Sooners, because they have to make those plays to help Alabama check those boxes. But
right,
at the same time, Alabama did not help themselves with the way they played this weekend.
Yeah, you have to be dang near perfect to beat Oklahoma in the postseason, especially in Norman. It was even a different animal than what we saw when OU came to Tuscaloosa and they're in the regular season, which Alabama had to play extremely well that weekend to win that series, which they did. It's frustrating as an Alabama fan just to watch it and know. But it's not like Alabama played just really bad this year, this weekend in the Super Regional, but they didn't play elite, and you have to be elite to be able to beat Oklahoma on the road. And, you know, one thing I know you talked a lot about as far as postseason too, is that winning, you have to have that winning in the postseason intangible. And Alabama certainly has that, as, you know, now not making it this year, but still Alabama's been to the Women's College World Series now 4 out of the last 7 years. And again, one of those years there wasn't a Women's College World Series. but no one has that intangible of winning the postseason more than Oklahoma does.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just it was a very, very tough draw for Alabama to be able to have to go on the road to play OU in Super Regionals. But one way you avoid that is be a little bit more consistent and get some bigger wins during the regular season, which is something that will certainly be addressed. All that Super Regional was basically a tip of the cap to what Oklahoma does. And, you know, Alabama just got Oklahoma'd in Norman. You had a really good opportunity in game number one because you held OU down to only the 3 runs, and you had opportunities and you weren't able to cash them in. And then, you know, you left that door right there where it could be slammed shut on you. And Oklahoma certainly did that in the third inning of game two.
Yeah, we talked a lot leading into it. I talked about it on a couple radio hits. I felt like Alabama had to do what they did last year against Tennessee, which was introduce doubt. And even game one last year against Tennessee, we left it like, I feel like Tennessee has questions right now. And at the end of game one this year, I think we said in the car, it was like maybe OU has like hesitations, but not necessarily questions or doubt. And those hesitations maybe could have turned into questions and doubt if Alabama had struck first in game two. That's not what happened. And it felt like when OU scored in the second inning of game two and Alabama did not, that's when I first felt like, oh, this isn't happening. This it's Alabama that's doubting. And then the top of the third happened, and it was from the Alabama side, the worst third inning of chaos in Gray history. But, you know, at least you didn't have to call it, partner.
Yeah, thank you so much. I missed a couple of batters during the fifth inning because I ate a brownie, and that got to me. I wish I had eaten brownies during that third inning because that was rough. And you know, they had the one home run in that third inning, but it's not like they just mashed Alabama just with homer after homer and extra base hit after extra base hit. But they passed the bat down as well as I've ever seen anybody do against the Tide. Then after that, you know, you had, you know, Alabama trying to do everything they can to just try to put something together and come back. I was happy to see the home runs from both Callie and Marley Giles. But, you know, then you had pitchers that, well, we can't afford to walk somebody. We got to throw it down the middle for the most part and throw strikes. And OU then unleashed the home run barrage later on in the game. So it was, again, it was just, you know, Oklahoma'd. And that's why they are now going to the World Series for the ninth straight year, and why they're trying to win their fifth straight is because they do it better than anybody. Even though it doesn't matter if it's a different group of players, they're still putting on that crimson and cream and still putting on that OU logo, and they just know how to do it.
I will say from the Alabama standpoint specifically, I really, and we'll talk again about her impact later in this episode, in the senior dedication. We'll talk about it in the finale. Statistically, Callie Heuvelm was awesome against OU all year. She hit over 500 in the super and the regular season series combined. That was huge. It makes you wonder like what could have been if Vandergriff and Johnson in particular have been able to get on base at all in game one. With a little more frequency in game two, but I just wanted to specifically isolate Callie because as I was looking at the season stats against the Sooners, her numbers just leapt off the page, and that perfectly encapsulates the entire year she had. Hopefully, by the time we get to the finale, we have done the campaigning needed to get her an All-American spot. We'll see. Those will be coming out later this week as we record, but she was so good. She was so good against the best team Alabama saw this year.
Yeah, she was great and all season long, but yeah, like you said, especially against Oklahoma, she had some of her biggest games against the best teams that Alabama played. And you know, that just kind of again to her speaks to her leadership that she had both on and off the field. She was going to do everything she could. Just unfortunately, just couldn't get enough support around her to be able to really give OU a big challenge.
So this is also the time before we take a break. Again, we're not doing like segments, but I do have to have some spots for our sponsors or whatever. So
Sure.
let's talk about Love's
Our
Field,
partners, if you will.
our partners. What do you think of
I
Love's?
thought it was great. It lived up to the hype for sure. And you know, it was weird that you and I kind of had different thoughts about it, and not about how nice it is, but like I thought on TV it looked smaller than it actually is. But then when we got there and down on the field during practice and just kind of looking at it, it seemed just massive to me. And it might have been because of the backdrop and the scoreboard being in center field, and the aesthetic of the batter's eye shrubbery to the back to the scoreboard. I think that had something to do. I don't know, but also it's massive, but it's also intimate because everybody's just right on top of you. I think
Right.
the fact that it's stands all the way around is great, and hopefully more and more teams, when it's time to build a new stadium or renovate what they have, will incorporate a lot of what Love's did. But I was very, very impressed. They did it right. I'm best, one of the best facilities, if not the best in the country.
Yeah, it was interesting because I walked in and we also polled pretty much everybody and a couple of people not even there. And it was kind of 50-50, honestly, because everybody, I felt like walking in, it felt smaller than it looked on TV. I don't know why, but, and that's not an insult. I'm just saying, like, to your point, it doesn't change the atmosphere. It just seems so huge on TV. And you walk in and it's like, oh, this is another softball stadium, just with more seats. But it was a very unique environment. We talked about this a lot on the radio. It felt the most like Rhodes of anything we've ever been a part of. I've seen some chatter online, and if you're listening, sir, I'm confused what you meant. But I think some people were a little confused by our analysis of the crowd and kind of the way that they cheered. It was meant to be a compliment, us talking about the way that OU fans, especially in game two, I felt specifically early in game two, were very proactive and not reactive. That's a good thing, 100%. And I always say, when we're talking about crowds, like, I'm pinpointing the people there, because oftentimes the people on social media are not the ones that are being proactive. They're always being reactive, but people in venue, they're being proactive. And so that's normally what we isolate when we discuss crowds and whatnot. Radio booth was beautiful. Press box was wonderful. The back locker room area. Of all the stadiums where we don't have like direct outdoor access to the dugout, this is probably the easiest dugout access we've had. Getting in was easy. Parking was significantly
Oh
easier
yeah.
than I expected.
Getting the parking pass was huge, but I feel as though, with that, there's a giant parking lot that is also, I believe, the basketball arena's parking lot, right across the street. Even if we hadn't had a parking pass, I think we would have been fine getting parking, and just overall, just a tremendous facility, tremendous experience. And like you said, like I think one of the things I said during the one of the broadcasts was, I feel like I'm at Rhodes, just they're cheering for the other team. It is, and again, that was a compliment, because there Rhodes is one of the few places in the conference or in the country that we're at where there's a lot of encouragement from the fans of, if the especially if the home team is down, which unfortunately we didn't get to experience that, but if the home team
Next
is down,
time.
right, next time, if the home team is down, there's been a lot of places that we've been where, the crowd gets quieter, until something good happens. And I don't feel like that would have been the case at Love's. I feel as though it would have been, like it is at the Rhodes House, where, okay, that means we have to be louder. That means we have to be more encouraging. And I think that would have been the case, had Alabama gotten in the lead at some point.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about this before we take a quick break, because I mentioned this on Good Morning Softball America, I want to mention it here because you are the only person besides me who has read the message that I received. I'm not going to say who sent it, but I will reveal that it is somebody, a part of the Oklahoma softball program, who sent me a message that I've never received before. And it was one of the classiest texts I've ever gotten in my life, one of the nicest texts I've ever received, out of the blue. With zero warning, to the point where I first got it and I was like, is this a prank? And it was so gracious, and classy continues to be the one word that I think of. And I just wanted to say on the pod publicly how much that meant. And that is not something that we see very often, be especially, like, again, we'll talk to coaches, we'll talk to people in programs, whatever, but we've never had that sent specifically to me or to us. And that meant a lot. The whole weekend felt very respectful, and that message in particular meant a lot to me. So Just wanted to pinpoint that before we take a break.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I would echo, the thoughts back. They're nothing but respect for what Oklahoma is and what their program has built and has created there, the success they've had. Unfortunately, sometimes when you have that type of success, we see it for Alabama with football and some other sports, that creates and can breed with a certain percentage of the fan base an entitlement and a perception, and a lack of perspective on, what the expectations are. So that does sometimes create, a small percentage of that fan base that will be, like you said, the ones that'll smack talk and will come after. It's like they were the number two seed. Alabama was the 15. What happened is what should have happened. It would have been an upset had Alabama been able to even, be in the series, force that game three. It would have been awesome, but that was, that it was set up for Oklahoma to win, and that's what they did. But yeah, very, very classy program. Classy players, had no problem with anybody. Outside of that, that 5% of people online that we discuss, as we talked about before, had if Chris Plank had a podcast that was truly Oklahoma softball only, like this one is, his is the only one that could have an off the wall segment that would rival Alabama's and ours.
I kid you not, dear people, OU fans, Alabama fans, reach across the aisle because the similarities are there more than you think.
Oh man, absolutely. It's the same. It's the same bunch of people. It's 100%.
it's like when we play Uno, it's the same.
It's the same.
Oh man, that's an inside joke for like Holly Jones, and that's it. But hopefully she's listening. So Oklahoma's going to the Women's College World Series. But who do they play and what side of the bracket are they on? Well, Tom, I think we should take a break and then talk about it.
Okay, sounds good.
We're gonna do like office ladies and just come up with some fake errands to run and step aside. When we come back, we'll look at the World Series bracket, couple quick picks, little analysis, all that juicy stuff here on the Out of the Box podcast.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Okay, welcome back. Hi, great Tom. Out of the box. Shortened episode-ish. I don't know. What if it's not, and we didn't do segments, and this was a horrible idea?
I think it needs to be truncated.
Okay, we're working on it.
Yeah.
Also, spoiler alert, dear people, we're recording this at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. That's great.
So let's look at the World Series bracket. We're going to pick Thursday, Friday, Elimination Day, and Saturday, Winner's Bracket Day action. So as we pick it, we're going to go through the matchups and talk about it a little bit. So our first game that we're going to select is the very first game of the day at 11 a.m. Central Time. It is the 3 national seed Florida Gators and the 6 seed Texas. Now, I don't have a ton to say about the Florida Georgia Super Regional. I was surprised that Georgia took a game, honestly, but I was not surprised how Florida won it. Texas, boy, they got to be feeling like a cat who just staved off one of their 9 lives because they probably shouldn't be here. It took some really gutsy stuff from Teagan Caban to get out of that Super Regional against Clemson.
Yeah, well, we have, again, talking about that postseason intangible, and Texas is a team that has that to get to the Women's College World Series. And part of getting over the hump, why it's so difficult to get there when you haven't, is what happened to Clemson. Because if you have the run that's going to send you to the Women's College World Series 60 feet away with no outs, and you can't get her home, and you give Texas that chance, I was not surprised at all that Texas, once they came back and won that game two, that they won game three. I kind of thought they would win it by more. Actually, Clemson coming back and making it a close game was a little bit surprising to me, but Texas, you know what, if you leave that door open just a little bit, they're a team that's going to be able to take advantage of it. And it sets up just a really juicy matchup between Florida and Texas, one that we thought we were going to get in the SEC tournament. But then Florida ran up against apparently the buzzsaw of Ole Miss, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. But this is going to be a really fun matchup, one I've been very intrigued to see.
All right, poker chip, old or new, Tom?
Give me new this time.
It is new. Would you like to go first or second?
I will go second.
Okay, then I will go first.
I'll play defense in the overtime.
Crap. I'm going to go with Florida, and here's why. When they played that regular season series way back on Monday night when we watched it at Heat Pizza, Tegan Kavan was throwing and played a lot of that series. Keegan Rothrock did not. Keegan Rothrock was hurt. We've seen All-American Keegan Rothrock in flashes since then. I think Steph's going to have her ready. I think she will be prepared. I've got Florida winning this game, and that's kind of really the only reason why. I think this might be the best game of the day. And the fact that Dayside is now quote unquote prime time because of ABC is always going to be weird. It's going to be odd waking up at 10 a.m., not waking up, but rolling up to the stadium at 10 a.m., getting ready for this to be the kickoff game. But I just think Florida is going to find a way because Tim Walton in the postseason cannot be denied. And Texas, while they did have to do a lot of good to get out of Supers, I still would contend that they are not playing great softball right now. I think it's good softball. I don't think it's great softball.
I think the big difference in this game, or the big key, I should say, is going to be what Florida does with Reese Atwood, because she is a player, you know, kind of like we talked about during the regular season with Bree Ellis, that you have to atone for every time they go through the lineup, and may warrant the Barry Bonds treatment, depending on where everything is during that time in the game. I think they're going to be able to handle her enough to stay a run or two ahead. So I will agree with you. I'm going to go with Florida as well.
Wow. So Texas in the losers bracket.
Mm.
Why? Okay. Game two at 1:30 Central is 7 seed Tennessee, 2 seed Oklahoma. We've obviously discussed the Sooners. Any thoughts at all on Tennessee getting by Nebraska? Kind of pulling a reverse of what happened to them last year against Alabama, losing game one against the Huskers and then winning the next two.
Yeah, really impressed by Tennessee and what they were able to do to get out of that regional. I thought that might be one of the surprise picks that I got that might work out when Nebraska won game number one there. But credit to the Lady Vols to figuring out, and Carlin Pickens on another level as far as velocity. You know, everyone was saying 79 miles per hour. Okay, maybe she can throw it 83, and that'll help against Oklahoma. That's the one thing. That might do it. I'm going to go with Oklahoma just because if that Oklahoma offense that we saw in Norman can make the 30-minute trip down the road to Oklahoma City, they're going to be hard to beat anybody, no matter who's pitching to them. But I do think Tennessee, between Tennessee and Nebraska, I think Tennessee has a better chance of being able to beat OU. But I'm going to go with the Sooners.
I just don't know how many runs Tennessee's going to score. And I understand when they played this series in Norman a month ago that they got wins on Sam Landry and shout out, like they played well. But I don't know. I mean, Sam Landry cooked up her changeup big time against Alabama. We talked about it on the air. I think it was 24% of the time she was throwing it, and it was up to 40 by the sixth inning. I don't know what it finished at. It probably went higher, honestly, because I think in the sixth inning was when she had like five straight changeups to get two strikeouts.
Yeah.
So if she's cooking the change, Jordy Ball had some success with her off speed against Tennessee in the Super Regional, especially in game three. So I just don't know how many runs Tennessee's going to score, and however many they score, I'm pretty sure even against Pickens, who's absolutely on a heater right now, I think OU can get there. So just playing the percentages, I am going to pick Oklahoma here. It's quite the day side, though.
It is.
All
As
right,
I
go
as
ahead.
much as we talked about, I think last week when we were looking at the field, how it looked a little bit, it looked even kind of coming in, but the way that the Supers kind of fell, I think this is, by far the tougher side of the bracket.
So let's go to the night side at 6 o'clock Central. 12 seed Texas Tech against unseeded Ole Miss. Where do we begin here?
We talked about how we thought it was crazy that South Carolina was last in the preseason coaches poll in the conference. You know who was second to last? Ole Miss.
Don't let the Rebs get hot, apparently.
It's pretty impressive. I am, it was certainly more shocking to me that Ole Miss was in this situation than South Carolina being in their situation. I don't know if there were many other teams that Ole Miss would have beat in super regional play. I think it kind of worked out pretty perfectly for them to be able to make the run, even though, because they were on the road, because they weren't going to be able to host, unless
Right.
some crazy upsets happened. To have to go on the road to go against a conference team you had already played and one that was kind of fighting their own demons as far as postseason success goes. A lot of things kind of fell into place for Ole Miss, not taking anything away from them. They won the games. They deserved to win them. To come out in game three in Fayetteville and win that game the way they did, very, very impressive.
And I know a lot of people are waiting. And they will have to wait longer. We will hash out the Arkansas of it all in the finale. But they're not playing here. We're talking about Ole Miss and what Ole Miss did with transfers and freshmen. Like they've got a lot of people who are playing their last year of college on this roster who are starters and a lot of freshmen who are starters making a big impact. And that group has coalesced in ways that a lot of programs can't do, except for maybe one, which is Texas Tech, which is what makes this such a just juicy, interesting, kind of unpredictable matchup. I get like I feel like the one constant that we know is that Nyjah's really good and it's going to be very hard for Ole Miss to score. But otherwise, on both rosters, Texas Tech and Ole Miss, you're dealing with a lot of kids who are at a new spot who are experiencing all this for the very first time. And I'm very intrigued to see outside of Nyjah, because she'll be fine. Who is able to handle it better? Because if the answer is Ole Miss as a whole, Nyjah can still shove it and Texas Tech still might lose if there are mistakes and miscues elsewhere.
It's gonna be interesting how much of this is going to be a mandate on, does the experiment of Texas Tech work? Does this, is this how you build a roster now? I would like to know. This is your homework for when we get to looking at it. How many of the, what percentage of the starting lineup or of people that actually contribute were recruited out of high school to go to Texas Tech? It's not very high. You know how you know where if that if you can do that solely on, hey, we have money, let's go buy the best players that we can, do it mercenary style. I don't know if that's set up for long-term success, but if you do it that way, I don't think you care about long-term success. You're about winning right now. You have Nyjah right now, so you go and see if she can take you all the way to the promised land. Took her She has taken this team to the World Series for the first time ever. This is the first time they were in super regionals, for goodness sakes. And they make it to Oklahoma City. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they will face, and the fact that they don't have to face one of the perennial World Series teams. They get to face a newbie coming in there as well. It might end up being the best possible situation for them. And I think it
That
is. So I'm going to pick Texas Tech to win this game.
I was about to go there too. That being said, I'm taking Texas Tech. I think sneakily this game could be really great. Like I could see a world where it's 2-1 Texas Tech and that's it, or 1-0, 2-0, something like that. But the fact that there is kind of the one like intangible wiper, like she seems to dispel all the trends and the facts and the stats. Nyjah is just undeniable. It like
I don't think she's going to go in there and just no hit them and not give Ole Miss a chance.
I don't
I think
either.
Ole Miss is going to score. I think they're going to score some. But
I don't
I
think
think
she'll no
Texas Tech
hit
will be
them.
good. Right.
But I mean, man, she's just different. That's just a different
Sure.
kid.
Absolutely.
That'll be fun. ESPN2, that's Kevin Amanda. Last game, Oregon UCLA. A
And you know things go off
classic.
the rails when it's Kevin and Amanda too, by the way. So that'll
That
be fun
means
too.
one of these will be a walk-off.
Yeah, Oklahoma and UCLA, I mean, Oregon and UCLA, former Pac-12 teams now meeting as Big Ten teams in the Women's College World Series, just like we
Naturally.
all thought. Sure. How about, Oregon sneaks in as the final host. So for them to, come out of that regional with the, big comeback victory and being able to hold off Stanford, then they kind of get, a gift because they don't have to play number one overall seed. Liberty is able to come through and get that big upset, so they get to host Liberty instead of having to go to College Station. So that's a huge plus for them. And Liberty made it weird. They tried, but Oregon was able to come through, and it sets
That
up an
Dr. Dodd and
interesting.
her challenges, man.
Oh man, well, you can't blame where they worked. So for the most part, who knew going backwards is actually leaving early? I didn't know about that. But the fact that they got to go there, and then now they're going to face a team that they certainly know all about with UCLA, and talk about that postseason intangible. I mean, they're down three going in with three outs for their season to come to an end, and South Carolina with a chance to go to the Women's College World Series, and they walk off South Carolina, and then they come and they beat South Carolina in game three. On the road, that's all about that postseason intangible.
Yeah, that was like classic UCLA in a series where for one game and six innings, South Carolina looked like by far the better team. And it just, if anything, that totally proves the intangible. Like Clemson, Texas was a window, but the whole UCLA South Carolina series is like, this is a team that knows how to do it, and this is a team that doesn't yet. Yet is the important phrase there, because I think when we get to the finale and we'll talk about South Carolina, we're going to talk about a program that is progressing a lot quicker than we expected, and a staff, I think, that is progressing a lot quicker than anyone expected. They will have some roster turnover. We'll save all that for the finale. But UCLA has earned where they are. They played in the regular season series in Eugene. Oregon won that 2 out of 3. This is OKC. This is different. I am taking UCLA.
So if I also take UCLA, will we pick all four the exact same?
We will. Is this the biggest toss up on day one, or is it Florida, Texas?
I think it's Florida, Texas, a little bit more of a toss up. I'm also going to pick UCLA. So I'm yeah, we'll all pick the same four, which means I expect day number one to just be crazy and none of these to really go the way that we think they will. I mean, I just think UCLA is a little bit better, and they're certainly more battle tested entering this part of the tournament. And man, they've been there before. Oregon's been there before too, but not this group. So I'm going to go with the Bruins as two.
All right, let's pick our Friday elimination games. This one sucks. Texas and Tennessee. This would be the Friday first game. The fact that day two, one of these two very, very talented teams would be going home is absurd to me. And it shows why this event is so fun and so heartbreaking and so exhilarating. I'm going to go with Tennessee. I think Texas is 2-Q in OKC, which doesn't make sense. Unless Pickens throws so many pitches and it's a close loss against Oklahoma, I think she'll throw this game, and I think she'll be able to handle the Longhorns kind of like she did in Austin.
I think here's our first disagreement. I'm going to go with Texas because I think we've seen in the Women's College World Series, Karen Weekly sometimes goes a little bit against, kind of against your thought process as far as who pitches. And I think if Pickens takes a loss against Oklahoma, I think she'll try to go with Sage Marjecko and try to go everybody else to get past Texas and then get that day off and then and try to make the run after that. And I think Texas is just gonna touch them up a little bit too much. It's gonna be a close game, but I'll go with the Longhorns. I just can't. And how frustrating will that be for Tennessee if that were to happen? Not only were they the only team to have to go to both Oklahoma and Texas during the regular season in
Oh.
the conference, you have to play Oklahoma and Texas in the Women's College World Series.
It just reinforces the importance for these four teams to win Thursday,
Yeah.
because fighting out of the loser's bracket on this side of the No.
Nope.
The pass is hard. Night
No
Friday
bueno.
game, Ole Miss, Oregon for both of us.
Yeah.
Screw it. Hottie toddy. I'll just say Ole Miss will get one. I'll go Ole Miss here.
I think for Ole Miss to win, this is the best case scenario, to play a team like Oregon. But I have a feeling that Texas Tech game is going to drain them pretty good, because I think they're going to come really close and not be able to get it done. So I'm going to go with Oregon here.
Okay. Our winners bracket games, everyone stop, because Saturday, May 31st, 2 o'clock Central Time on ABC, we have Florida, Oklahoma.
Goodness gracious.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Florida and Oklahoma in OKC. Stop me if you've heard this one before.
Oh my gosh. I'm gonna talk myself into picking Oklahoma to win the Natty again, aren't I? If
Well, they're the
Keegan,
highest seeded team remaining.
yeah, if Keegan is special against Texas, here's the other thing about since the injury. How many times has Keegan been All-American Keegan in back-to-back games? There's been very, very rarely, if ever.
Yeah.
So if she's special against Texas, like I think she can be, can I possibly expect her to do that against a better potentially offense? I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds of the Texas versus OU offense, but I think OU for sure is at least as, if not more so, more explosive than Texas. All in all, I just don't know if I can pick the Gators here. So I'm going to take the Oklahoma Sooners to get to the semis.
The one thing that makes me think they could be able to get back-to-back special Keegan is the fact that they're going to have that day off, Friday day off. So it's not like she'll have to go back-to-back against Texas, Oklahoma.
And will Sam Landry throw both games? If I'm OU, I am not necessarily letting the Kirsten Deal game two performance trick me, isn't the right word, but like lull me into not throwing Sam Landry every possible inning in
Yeah.
OKC. I think OU's path to winning a natty is with OU or with Sam Landry in the circle.
I agree. I think you'll get Sam Landry here in this game. I think it'll be Landry and Rothrock. Just consistency wise, I give the edge to Landry in that situation. Because yeah, we're talking so much about Oklahoma's offense. Sam Landry in the circle is another one of the main reasons why they would be the favorite to go back and win their fifth straight national championship. And yeah, I'm going to go with Oklahoma in this matchup as well.
All right, the other winners bracket game, we both have Texas Tech and UCLA. UCLA's got to be like, we thought we were rid of her, and now we got to play her again. I
Right.
mean, they've beaten Nyjah a good bit, actually,
You're right.
but it's still Nyjah.
It is Nyjah, but I also think UCLA has to be like, how in the world did we have the good fortune of being on this side of the bracket? And have that chance. I mean, more often than not, Nyjah shoves it in OKC, but every once in a while she doesn't. I think a little bit more pitching depth for UCLA. A lot of times we see all the pitchers in the same game, but they're not quite as taxing on the arm. Nyjah's superwoman, but she is a human. I'm going to go UCLA.
Me too. So that means we both have OU and UCLA in our semis. This is where our specific games will stop. We'll move forward to our natty picks. I will point out that this sets up on ABC on Sunday, elimination games of Texas Tech for you and Tennessee, Texas Tech for me.
Wow.
So
So we could,
ABC, good choice.
it's good either way. So we get Nyjah versus Carlin, Nyjah versus whoever they end up throwing. Probably Kevon, but it could be, Texas could throw a little bit more. They have more of the depth there. So it'll be a fun matchup either way.
All right, so let's look ahead. Think about the bracket. Think about it because now we've both picked it to where Nyjah's on the OU side. So for Texas Tech to get there, they would have to beat the Sooners twice.
Twice, yeah.
Who is winning the Natty this year, Tom?
I think anybody at this point would be foolish not to pick Oklahoma. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, but they have gotten to the point now where, it's someone has to come take it from them. And I don't know if anybody's going to be able to do that, because I think some of the teams that have the capability to do it are going to be, like you said, are going to be coming through the loser's bracket and will have to do it twice, even before you get to the championship series.
Right.
So it's going to be very difficult. I'm going to go with Oklahoma.
Yeah, my biggest question about the Sooners, as great as Deal was, she wasn't shut down against Alabama. And I just still worry about the pitching depth behind Sam Landry and just the path that I have laid out here. I'm looking at it and it's like, well, where's the depth going to get tested?
Right.
Really? Unless somebody beats Sam Landry specifically on Monday or in game one of a champ series. And I'm just not sure. Like, do I think that's Texas? I don't. Do I think it's Texas Tech? Not really. Do I think it's Tennessee? Eh, like,
Well,
probably not.
that may be like, if it may be, we talk about it a lot of times in the basketball tournament. Like, if that one team just gets past that very first hurdle, then it might be like, if like Tennessee might have to beat Oklahoma for there to be any shot for them not to win the World Series on day one.
Yeah.
And knock, if they do what, Odyssey and James Madison did and knock them into the losers bracket on day one, that is where that pitching depth is going to come back and hurt them. No pressure, but the hopes of everybody is riding on Tennessee in game number one.
I would just like to say in that scenario where Tennessee, if they were to beat OU, then we're looking at a possible Sunday, ABC, June 1st, Nyjah versus the Sooners elimination game at the World Series. Sign me up. I
You're
would
right.
be there seated for
Yes.
that.
Yeah, that's where, okay, in a one game scenario, sure.
Yeah. All right, we're
But
both
are
picking
you
OU. How
right?
crazy are we?
Do I get credit for picking them to win the SEC tournament, considering they are co-champions?
Then I get credit for picking A&M.
That's true. That is true.
Let's not talk
We
about the
both
next
win.
tournament they played in. It's time. Grab your tissues. Prepare yourselves. I am now, Tom, going to, do a little music send-off right into the senior dedication. I think it's time that we honor the departing upperclassmen from Team 29 here on this pod.
In a way, I don't look forward to it in any stretch of the imagination, but it is also kind of one of my favorite things that we do, because I'm very, we get to know them. We get to know them as people more, even more than softball players. It's a sad thing when their careers come to an end, but it's a great chance for us to have a chance to, honor them and talk about them, as whether it's telling us an anecdote or just, appreciating stats and appreciating leadership skills, everything that they have. It's a great chance for us to really take a look at what they've brought, whether they've been here for 10 months or 6 years, which we've dealt with both during this time. So it's something that I feel privileged and honored to be able to do every year.
Beautifully said. Now let's hear what we said beautifully in Norman. Ladies and gentlemen, the Team 29 senior dedication audio right now.
Kind of analyze the season as a whole and have further critiques on what happened this year, why, what needs to improve, what is really good and just needs to stay where it is.
Yeah.
Which there is a lot of really positive things to come out of this year
100%.
For the Crimson Tide. We'll certainly do that during the Out of the Box podcast. We'll have a year-end episode coming up relatively soon. We'll see what happens as far as everybody's travel for the Women's College World Series. I know you're going with Softball America,
how are we getting back?
Yeah, we'll find out a lot of things. But unfortunately for Alabama, this will be our final broadcast for the Crimson Tide Sports Network for the year, and an opportunity to take a look at the five seniors on this team that are wrapping up their playing careers for the Crimson Tide. And I think we should start off with a senior who was named a captain despite being a transfer from Des Moines Area Community College, Kendall Clark, who had a hand injury to start off this season. So kind of went behind the eight ball a little bit as far as getting, you know, cracking into the starting lineup, mostly because Alabama, especially in the outfield where Kendall Clark would probably have been playing,
right,
got so stacked so quickly with so many great young players. But can't say enough about the leadership and what Kendall Clark has brought to this team in a couple of years coming in from Iowa.
I remember when Kendall first arrived on campus and we were at practice, or it was after practice, and we were walking out. Might have been a fall ball game, I think.
Yeah.
And we heard somebody hitting in the cages, and we're like, who's that? Okay, let's go walk in and see. It's Kendall Clark getting in the extra reps, and, man, that kid works hard.
Yeah.
Just a real pleasure to have in Tuscaloosa. And, oh, God, every year.
Okay. Here we go.
This
Come
is
on.
My first time seeing Alabama lose in a super, actually. So history made.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Just she led. She led so well. She and Marley, such a good pair.
Yeah.
To lead this team, and I was so impressed at how Kendall never got down, even though she did face the adversity of the hand injury, of just the stacked outfield, the tough way to break through.
Yeah.
She never got down, always had a good attitude, led well, and I think has made her impact in Tuscaloosa for a long time. Ironically, probably her best moment was against a pitcher who later came to be a teammate against Ole Miss last year, a three-run homer on a changeup that still lives rent-free in my head. And she's just the kind of kid that you want to pull for.
Yeah.
And can't wait to see what she does next.
That teammate was Caitlin Riley, who came over from Ole Miss, 1 year senior transfer, and at numerous times throughout this year for extended periods of time, she was Alabama's number one.
Yeah.
You know, had made some inroads and got some big hits offensively, but really solidified herself what she did in the circle. Her performance against Oklahoma during the regular season really sticks out, obviously, and wasn't necessarily pitching poorly here today either.
Yeah.
But some amazingly huge innings for Lance Mann and Patrick Murphy and the Crimson Tide here all season long. And talk about another player that just fits right in to Bama U, and one that certainly wish might have been here a few more years.
Yeah.
Loved having her for this season, and she was very, very instrumental in Alabama getting to where they did.
My personal stylist as well.
You're right, of course.
Got me
yes.
the Caitlin Riley shoes.
Oh,
which
lovely.
I will sport for.
This was not their fault?
No. Sweet
we
shoes.
Not, we do not blame the shoes.
Do need to get the stain out from the front.
Well,
but
you
know,
adds character.
Minor details.
Yes.
Yeah, man. It's so funny to me how few people really understood what Alabama was getting with yeah. Caitlin Riley. And I'm not even just talking about as a player, although I could read some receipts if I wanted
sure.
to.
Well, I do that along those lines. When we were down at the FGCL last year,
mm-hmm.
and it was announced that Caitlin Riley is coming to Tuscaloosa, and everyone that we said anything to about her said, you're going to love her.
Yeah.
And they were right.
Yeah. I mean, what a great kid. I've loved getting to know her family. Wish she'd been here longer. But, I mean, there are some people, it doesn't really matter how long they're there. You just know when you're around them that relationship is going to be forever.
Right.
And Caitlin is that kind of kid.
Absolutely.
Just a great hang, funny. Can't wait to give her a big old hug tonight. I know this hurts. This wasn't on her. She pitched amazingly at times this year, just had a little bad luck, a little bad execution at times today. That happens to you.
Yep.
But overall, Caitlin Riley, what she added to this team was so necessary because you had to have somebody with Brisky.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had to step up. That was our biggest question, right? Like, you've got the people. Who's going to step up and be the person? And it was Caitlin Riley.
And we'll see if eventually it gets out. I'm not going to say it, but she dealt with a lot this year that a lot of people do not know about. And her fight, her toughness, her attitude was inspirational. So congratulations to Caitlin on a great career and a wonderful season here in Tuscaloosa.
Joining her as a one-year transfer in the bullpen was Emily Winstead, who came to Tuscaloosa from UNCW, and she finished off this game. They gave up a home run, but, you know.
Finished off with two Ks.
Yeah, but got the two strikeouts in the game here in this one, and somebody that, along those same lines, added as much to the vibes and the just the overall atmosphere around the team, and then had some big innings in the circle for Alabama as well.
So I don't really talk about much what pregame is like, but on the road, and I got to do it today, and I'm so glad. You know, we do the interview with Murph, we do all our pregame stuff, and then I will go and I will sit with the pitchers for about 25 minutes, give or take. Sometimes you'll be there, sometimes you'll go up and deal with rain delays or whatever. And I'll sit and I'll just pick the brain of Brisky and Ailey and Caitlin and Emily Winstead, and some of the most riveting conversations I have ever heard this year came from Emily Winstead. She's got stories, man.
Yeah.
She's seen it all. She's experienced so much.
Sometimes it's even about softball.
Yeah. Very rarely, quite frankly.
Right, yeah.
But she has faced a lot in her life, too.
Absolutely.
And she was given a chance by Patrick Murphy and by this program, and she did deliver in a lot of big spots. I know probably overall she did not have the season that she wanted or envisioned, but there were a lot of times this season where Alabama got wins they would not have gotten if Emily Winstead had not come on in relief and you know, gotten a couple key outs or something like that. So it was cool for her to end with a strikeout, and just another one of those personalities, another one of those smiling people. I mean, she was the one comforting Callie.
Yeah.
And just has done such a great job assimilating in this program. I don't know how Murph keeps doing it, finding the kids, the people, not just the players. But Emily is a great example of that. Are there more? My gosh, I know there are more.
We got a couple more.
I know.
The last one that transferred into the program for 1 year, somebody who Patrick Murphy throughout this entire year, at, you know, has talked about, just straight talent-wise, what she can do at the plate. Probably the best hitter on the team this year was Brooke Ellestad. And she came in, transferring in from Louisiana, Kimberly, Wisconsin native. Started her career at St. Thomas before going to Louisiana and then finishing off here in Tuscaloosa. And, man, this offense needed somebody like Brooke Ellestad.
Yeah.
And she came through big time and finishes just second to the other senior, which we'll talk about here momentarily, in RBIs on the year for this team. And, man, she was good.
Yeah, she was really good. Another one, like, she is so unique. I don't think I've ever met a person quite like Brooke Ellestad. Mm-hmm. And I was warned is not the right word, but I was informed early on what we were getting. Heard about her visit. Heard that she was off the cuff and going to say things and kind of be herself all the time. One of her best friends, Sydney Supley, said, "You're getting a kid who will go all in and who's not afraid to be herself."
Yeah.
And that's Brooke, man. She was so versatile.
That's what you want. That's what you
want. Yeah, just that's what BAMU is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, be you. And I was so impressed by her versatility. You know, she was so clutch at so many times. The bases loaded doubles against Missouri, that was a moment. Let's go back to opening weekend. Alabama, game in doubt against Washington. Here's Brooke Ellestad, home run.
Yeah.
That made sure Alabama got that victory against the Huskies, a win that we now know Alabama really had to have.
Yeah.
So just a person who was creative, smart, funny, came up with a new fist bump every single game. And I am so glad she picked Alabama because she, too, has had a crazy story. She has been through a lot that no one will ever know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope we gave her the family she wanted for her last year of college.
Which brings us to the final senior on this team and the lone senior that started her career here in Tuscaloosa and you know, had an opportunity to do what, unfortunately, so many from her class did, and that was, you know, not stick with her commitment.
Yeah.
And Callie didn't do that. And talking about Callie Hevlin, the Three Rivers, Michigan native who parents drive double-digit hours virtually every weekend.
14 this week.
Yeah. So just a great family, a great kid, and one that we've talked about so much. Someone who improved every year as far as her playing ability. You knew when she came here, she was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, she had the capability of being great, improved every year, matured both on and off the field every year, became a true leader for this team, and then this year really put it all together for an all-conference season, just short of an All-American season.
Well,
probably, but we'll see.
I mean, I'm going to call whoever I need to call.
Right. But, man, what a senior campaign for Callie Hevlin. And like we saw at the end of this game, it meant the world to her.
Yeah. You know, in this job, we are not supposed to pick favorites. But yeah, it's hard not to have Callie at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it does start with the fact that she stayed, because it is so, so much easier for you to take the easy way out. Mm-hmm. And Callie was the one who didn't go. And I will never forget, I don't think I've ever told this story. You know, Callie played in the FGCL after her freshman year, and I ran into her dad, Sean Hevlin, who has been a great friend.
Yep.
And we were talking about all the stuff, you know, all Alabama fans are familiar. And he was like, yeah, you know, if you want to play, get better. And I was like, man, this kid's going to be all right.
Yeah.
She was raised right, but she worked the right way. And it got to the point where teams are being careful with Callie Hevlin, a kid that even last year was swinging out of her shoes at Rise Balls.
Yeah.
The improvement dispels a lot of myths about Alabama, but the personality shows exactly what Alabama is all about. And she stuck with it. She became a leader. She grew. She is the loudest person in the room in every great way you can imagine. You enter a room, your name will be screamed by Callie Hevlin.
Yeah.
And that kid stood on business this year in ways that she hasn't before, but she knew she had to, because Alabama had to have that player.
Yeah.
Every team, if you want to host a regional, if you want to compete in the SEC, you've got to have that kid. And it was Callie who stepped up. And I'm going to miss the heck out of her. Mm. It's going to be weird not seeing her in the dugout. But I know she's going to be around.
Oh,
she's not
sure.
Going anywhere.
Yeah. She was never handed anything.
No. She had to earn. She actually had a lot of things taken from her at times. It always seemed like her first two, frankly, 3 years, it was her job that was the, second base, so let's see. And it was always Callie who figured it out.
Right. She's never handed anything, but she never asked to be handed anything.
Right.
She was there to work and to improve and to put herself in the position where she could have a senior year like she did here this year. And probably if you pick an MVP of this season and why Alabama got to the position they did, where they were two games away from the Women's College World Series for the 16th time, it was because it was Callie Hevlin. Hevlin, the MVP of this season. And I know she didn't get the cap. She wasn't a captain, quote unquote, but she became one. She became one, and she was the leader of this team.
Yeah.
In many different ways.
I'm so impressed by her. She is like the selling point to me. Like, why Alabama? Callie Hevlin.
Yeah.
Like, this is what can happen. And I'm so proud of her.
Yep.
I'm so proud of her. I'm going to miss the heck out of her. Okay, there you go. Bye, seniors. We'll talk about you again on the finale. I don't want to cry again. I just want to say one thing, though. Parents,
And players, if someone sent you that audio and had you listen, I want you to 100% know that is all very much in the moment, how we feel, true to us, and all love for all of you. 100%. Like you said earlier, Tom, it's not something we necessarily look forward to doing because we know what doing that means, but the opportunity to even take 10, 15, 20 minutes, depending on the size of the class, to shine some light, fill in some color on these people who we've described for 4 years or 10 months is something that is very meaningful to both of us. And
absolutely,
because of how much they mean to us and their parents and their families and their siblings and just a lot of things. So the senior dedication, if this is well received, if you liked it, let us know, you know, leave a review or whatever, and maybe we'll make this a yearly thing. Maybe I'll hunt down the past seat. I don't know, but we probably might start doing this if people like it.
Yeah. And one other kind of peek behind the curtain a little bit is our hotel in Norman was across the street from some other restaurants and stuff. And when we were going to put our luggage in the van that made a trip separate from the plane.
Whole other story there, by the way.
Yeah, which is a whole other thing. But Callie Heflin and her family were coming out of the hotel or coming out of the restaurant across the street from the hotel. And the Heflins just kind of waved at me and yelled over. And then Callie told us later that her mom especially wouldn't be able to talk to us because she wouldn't be able to hold it together. It's like, well, we certainly understand that.
And also, may I publicly thank the Riley family for their gift to us.
Yes.
Wink, nudge. Thanks, guys.
It will be partaken in, mm-hmm, if it hasn't already on certain.
Excuse me. Well, perhaps this is a natural segue into Tom's hungry.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, you know, Nate's thirsty is a different thing, but mm-hmm, sometimes we partake in that while also enjoying the great food. And, well, look, I'm describing the segment. So instead, I'll just say, play the drop.
It's time for Tom's Hungry.
Yes.
Tom, take it away.
The bar for Tom's Hungry has been set incredibly high. The evening with the Shipmans and all their smoked meats of all types, unbelievable. Would you like a bacon-wrapped scallop? Yes, I would. After all the pictures, when I got home, my wife said I'm not allowed to eat a carb for like 3 or 4 days.
As I am pumping insulin, just thinking about as much food as I ate.
Yes, it's softball, blah, 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 food.
Okay, Tom, your segment, Norman. Here's the great thing about knowing so many OU people and having so many Sooners in our mentions. We appreciate all of you, whether you don't like us or do, because you're listening, and thank you. We also appreciate the amount of people who just kind of sent us places to go at the drop of a hat, and we did utilize some of those recs, did we not?
Absolutely, and you know, we had many more recs than we were able to get to. Just
blame your team for that. We had something ready for Sunday.
Oh yeah, the itinerary was set for not only, you know, through Sunday, but maybe Monday and Tuesday, depending on when we would make the switch over to hotels to Oklahoma City. It would, you know, don't beat us in two, and that doesn't happen.
Bigger picture, guys, bigger picture.
We got to be thinking. But yeah, it was another really good weekend for Tom's Hungry. We'll do podium during the finale, but I think there's a couple of contenders here in Norman, starting off with our dinner on the day we arrived at the Red Rock Canyon, which there is one that we, you know, traditionally go to when Alabama goes to Oklahoma City. I didn't know there was one in Norman, and there is, including a pier and a lake and everything. And I think this is the first time I've gotten the meatloaf at the Red Rock Canyon. And I will be getting it again. It was probably the best meatloaf I've maybe ever had. It was outstanding.
Wow.
Yes.
I got the spicy chicken sandwich. It was exquisite. And obviously the calamari app was wonderful as well. Tom even partook just a little bit. which we appreciate.
I'm not a fan of calamari, but I'm sure this was good.
I will say, though, something chocolate. I want to know what it is, and I want to try it. And we've never had the chance. One day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but definitely, I like the meatloaf so well, I wore some of it home. So there was that.
Thank goodness Stu was on the trip.
Yes, it's gone through several cycles in the washing machine as my poor shirt.
Not just my poor shirt. Tom's white as snow pullover.
Could not have been more white when it's got there. It certainly wasn't white when it left. But yes, really good stuff at Red Rock Canyon. The next morning, we went to Levity Breakfast House. They're kind of known for the Keep It Classy Norman was the name of the breakfast sandwich that almost all of us got. Bacon, egg, and cheese, including the garlic aioli sauce, which is just, yeah, that's what puts it over the top. Great stuff there. Hash browns, as well as a side waffle, which I'm a fan. Anytime I can get a side waffle, it was very, very good. And very nice staff as well. Guy just brought us a muffin, said, here, try this while you're here. We said thank you and indulged in it as well.
Yes, we appreciated the hospitality. I want to specifically highlight the hash brown because it was kind of cakey and very flat. It was almost as if you took a crab cake and smash burgered it, except it was a hash brown. And it was wonderfully done. And I'm not talking about like McDonald's, you know, smashed. I'm talking like,
right,
like wafer thin. It was very, very good. Perfectly crispy. The sandwich was excellent. My coffee was good. Really enjoyed Levity Breakfast House. Shout out to Breakfast Near Me. That was the only time we used insert meal near me whilst in Norman, and it paid off.
Yes, very good stuff. And then our next trip out was for lunch, and it was at a wonderful place called the Midway Deli.
Are we not shouting out Chewy's?
Well, okay. I mean, yeah, I guess Chewy's is – I didn't post Chewy's. I should have. I guess it is Tom's Hungry eligible now since we don't have one in Tuscaloosa anymore.
I got tacos. What'd you get?
I got the combo platter that had like enchiladas and tacos, good queso. So yeah, Chewy's was good.
Chewy's was good.
Bring it back.
Yeah. Or anything. Any Tom's Hungry eligible restaurant. We would love to have it in the Chewy's spot.
Legacy Park. Now the Asian buffet, which is the media dubbed it the Asian buffet.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of other now open storefronts in that shopping center as well as in Midtown, that so many places that we go on the road could certainly fit right in and make all the food for us.
Yeah, I'm sorry for interrupting, because shout out to Chewy's. Let's get to the real podium contender here. This is the one.
Midway Deli, which apparently he didn't eat there on that particular day, but is the favorite lunch spot for Barry Switzer in town in Norman. Man, it just rave reviews. I got the double decker club, which when they brought it out, I was like, I don't know if this is really the size of a double decker club, but it's one of those like once you get it in your hand and you start eating it, it's like, oh yeah, this is definitely two sandwiches in one. It was very, very good. Baked potato salad, which was just this side of Good Bull Barbecue good. It was outstanding. Mm-hmm. Really good baked potato salad. But I know there's a couple of other signature sandwiches that were partaken in by others on the trip, including what you got, so it was so good. You went and said, you know what? I'm going to get another one of these.
So I ordered the tiger with no tomato. Some people know I'm not a huge, I like tomato based things. I don't necessarily like eating actual tomatoes. It's texture, whatever. Giving you too much information about myself, but the sandwich itself was wonderful. And as per usual, it's the sauce. There was some kind of something in there, some kind of mayo. I should have done like taken a picture or something, but I ate this sandwich and I was like, dadgum, I could eat another one because my pill hadn't kicked in yet. So I was still hungry. And so I ordered another one, had half of it at the restaurant, saved the other half for a rainy day, which as it turned out, perfect way for me to eat a little bit before we flew out on Sunday morning. So shout out to you, Gray. Good thinking ahead. This was just a baller sandwich. I mean, this is what we want in Tuscaloosa. This is the thing. I don't, like, I know we got some lunch places around town. We don't have, in my view, a sandwich spot with, like, delicious original sandwiches where you can just go for lunch and just get a regular old sandwich. Maybe the closest is, like, Decades, but I don't know. That's kind of hard to get to. And, like, this was, like, in the middle of a neighborhood, but it's right by campus. It's right by downtown. I would be eating there every day. I get it, Coach Switzer. I get it, sir. So Midway, you are in the running. Midway is running. Midway is campaigning. Midway is hitting all the precursor awards. Midway's coming for that Oscar. Midway is coming for the podium. And I think the campaign is growing. It's a late charge, but it's an impressive charge. I'll say that.
Midway is chilling in Cedar Rapids, trying to make the run for this podium spot, and it may get there. It was outstanding. And like you said, yeah, the fact that it's kind of just in the middle of a neighborhood and you just go up there and, oh my gosh, here's this great sandwich spot, kind of adds to it. Really good atmosphere. Really cool. And then I think the last spot, other than, you know, we did finish off, we went to Brahms, which is another thing that I wish we could get in Tuscaloosa. Just, I mean, the burgers, the shakes, the ice cream, just really good stuff. So, and I know, yeah, they're up and down all over in the Midwest. Brahms, really good. Other than that, we went to, after a woman spent nearly 15 minutes just hanging around her car looking at it, like, just please back out. Please just leave so we can park.
The binky was not there, ma'am.
I don't know. Like, we pulled out the stroller 3 or 4 different times. We ate gum. It was like, just get in the car so we can have your parking spot. But we went to a place called the Mont in Norman, which was recommended to us by virtually everybody. I know Nicole was like, you have to go there. This is where you go. And I can see why. It was very, very good. Started things off with the swirl, which is would, I think, probably fit in pretty highly for Nate's thirsty. It was a frozen margarita sangria combo swirl, and quite delicious, refreshing.
Yeah.
Needed it after that, after the game.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, we drank that. We were watching softball. It was, I can just imagine that being like the perfect summer 95 degree drink. It wasn't quite that hot when we were there, thank goodness. It was toasty that day, but it wasn't, you know, that bad. And it just, it like hit the spot. I had 2 of them. No regrets. Loved it. It was great.
And then it had a lot of bar food. It had like Mexican food. It had like a combination. It was almost like a miniature Cheesecake Factory of like different ethnicities of food. You could do anything you wanted. But you know, they had really good cheese fries, which, having just gone to Baumhauer's earlier today, everyone knows I'm a big fan of cheese fries. So got those, really, really good. And then I got the queso burger, which the other thing that was recommended to us was you got to get like the, it was chili con queso. And it's just basically all it was on this burger was meat, queso, bun. Really good. Outstanding.
Yeah, I did the cheese sticks, mozzarella sticks. And this is where, again, we've covered this. This is where the pill can sometimes hurt me. My meds do not allow me to eat a lot. They had me locked in on the game, but I'm not super hungry. So my main was a salad. I will say, though, I got the small dinner salad for $3.95 with ranch dressing and, to the shock of no one, no tomato. And it was beautifully dressed. The ranch was coalescing with the lettuce at a perfect rate. It was well tossed. It was great. So for what I was looking for, it checked the box and I ate the whole dang thing, which is not always a guarantee. So shout out.
And shout out to the prices at the Mont. It wasn't like, you know, it didn't break the bank.
I think I dropped $39 and I got 2 drinks, an app, and a meal.
Right. You're right.
Like a cheaper meal, but still, I mean, I got 2 of their signature alcoholic drinks.
My burger was like $7.99. You can't beat that now.
Yeah.
So, and I know there, like we said, there were several other spots that were recommended to us, and Next time we go, we will certainly try to hit all those.
I will add one more and then we'll sign off. Yellow Dog. I picked up coffee from them twice. Once famously for only myself. The other time for Tom, Sherry, and Michelle and me. And best chai latte I've ever had.
Wow.
Genuinely.
All right.
Especially impressive doing it back-to-back days. You know, it's like Carlin Pickens, you know, pitching a gem, game 2 and 3 against Nebraska. Yellow Dog pitched a gem with the chai latte in games 1 and 2 against Gray. And then that was it.
It's all they needed.
Yellow Dog won the Super, going to OKC. I don't think it's enough for a podium spot, but just want to make mention of that because that was another place that a lot of people told us we need to go. And we brought the coffee home and then got run ruled, but it's fine.
Yeah, it wasn't the coffee's fault. Yeah, so there are several podium contenders from Norman, and this, I think, is probably going to be the most hotly contested Tom's Hungry podium probably ever.
Well, I'll also say this. I think it will most definitely, unless we're truly at another level in this partnership chemistry thing.
Yes.
Because normally our lists are pretty close. I think, you know, last year might have been the first time we haven't shared the gold medalists in like 3 years. So it is usually a pretty similar taste for us. I think it helps that the Last Resort is off the board, and we'll shout out the Last Resort and we'll do a whole Hall of Fame ceremony at some point in the finale. But I honestly don't know my podium at all. I don't know what yours is. And I feel like we might have some wildly different lists in some ways.
I thought for sure we would have another restaurant get sent up to the rafters and go to the Hall of Fame. It's not a guarantee.
It's not.
Because it's so deep, so deep.
Yes, this is the Hawaii of Good Bull of Montana of
Tom's Hungry.
Of Tom's Hungry. I couldn't think of another good thing. That's not great.
Sleep, because it's late, is probably the other good thing.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to ask because there's no way for people to listen to us anymore until 2026. So where can the people follow you and your various summer travels and whatnot on the X/Twitter, Tom?
Sure. T Canterbury RTR will be following along with all that type of stuff. Excited to head back down to the FGCL here in a few weeks, and it's going to be a fun summer. Chloe doing more ring announcing and all sorts of stuff happening. We got anniversaries coming up in a couple months. We got all sorts of stuff going on this summer. Yeah,
we got season 3 of Squid Game coming out while we're in the FGCL.
Yes.
We've got so many films to watch in the FGCL, hopefully none of which lead to lightning and floods and other natural disasters whilst in the theater.
Right. That's we have to deal with that enough at the FGCL. We don't need to add more.
That is a fact. I'm at Gray, Gray_Robertson. Hit me up. I will be at the World Series from Thursday until shrug question mark. I don't know. I might stay the entire time. I might not. It just depends on, frankly, what's going on here, what I've got to do to get ready for Florida. But I will be there. So, you know, stay tuned and follow Softball America. We're going to be going live every morning on Good Morning Softball America and every night on The Dirt, me and Nicole, and every game in between. We got something cooking online at Softball America. Tara, Nicole, Grace Johnson's coming. Brady will be there. So, you know, just follow the whole gang. It'll be a blast. And Tom, we've got the finale. I do not also know when that will be released. I just know we will record it after the World Series, but before the FGCL, and we will cover every SEC team, what they did this year, what their roster looks like at this point as we follow the portal. We'll, you know, recap the Alabama season. We'll talk to Patrick Murphy, hopefully, if we can nail down a date, because I know this time of year gets absolutely insane for coaches with the portal being what it is now. Off the wall. Tom's Hungry Podium, all name team, all the usual fun in the finale. Can't wait.
This was the quote-unquote short version before we get to that point.
The amuse-bouche, if you will.
Indeed.
And we hope it amused you.
I think I'd wrap it up on that.
Tom's like, we out.
Well.
T. Tom said that's a bye-bye, and I will say the same. For Tom Canterbury, I'm Gray Robertson. Thank you for joining us on the Out of the Box podcast. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.